This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. A record number of Americans, more than 82 million U.S. households, have pets. Yet each year, millions of pets are abandoned and approximately 3 million adoptable dogs and cats are euthanized. Many organizations work to find suitable homes for abandoned animals and to reduce the number of unwanted pets through spay and neuter programs. Here to discuss animal rescue centers and responsible pet care and adoption are Carol Sanger, League for Animal Welfare Board President and Board Member for Pets in Need, Melanie Corwin, Executive Director for United Coalition for Animals, and Carolyn Evans, founder of My Furry Valentine. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here.
Melanie, we're such a nation of animal lovers. You know, you have a commercial that stars a pet, like the puppy commercial on the Super Bowl, and people just, they love it, and they go gaga over it. And we have millions of pet owners across the country. So why is it that so many animals are abandoned?
Well, I think the main reason is because people don't spay-neuter their pets. 70,000 puppies and kittens are born each day compared to 10,000 humans. At that kind of ratio, there's never going to be enough homes for them all. So one of the main reasons is that people don't spay-neuter their pet and they procreate. For example, a cat, one unaltered female cat and her offspring can produce 420,000 cats in 7 years. That adds up.
Does it ever? So it's a matter of overpopulation is what you're saying.
Correct.
Now, Carol, what's your perspective on this? Why so many abandoned animals?
Well, I think it's a multifaceted problem. There are people who adopt on impulse. They don't do their homework, and therefore they may get the wrong pet for them. There are lifestyle changes, people moving, people going into nursing homes, people dying, divorce, whatever lifestyle change that causes someone to turn a pet into a shelter or a rescue group. There are reasons that go far beyond just the boundaries of our area that deal with puppy mills and the backyard breeders, the people who are irresponsibly breeding these animals and selling them through pet stores to people who think they're getting a great dog or a great cat, but in fact are supporting an industry that is nothing short of appalling. I think that those issues are the big ones for most of the shelters that I've seen. And to Melanie's point, the lack of spay-neuter on the part of people who either do not know or do not care, not educated on what the implications of that are, that's certainly a huge part of the problem, too. And it's not an issue that you're ever going to adopt your way out of. So spay-neuter is at the root of it all.
Carolyn, what's your perspective on this? Why so many abandoned pets?
I have to agree that spay-neuter is certainly at the root of the problem. However, I think that there's a bit of a supply and demand issue and where people are getting their animals from, and that is why we started My Furry Valentine, which is Cincinnati's mega adoption event. If people would look at adopting an animal as opposed to purchasing an animal from a breeder or a pet store, we could tackle a big part of that problem if people would adopt animals that are already available.
Carol, how many abandoned animals across the country each year? Any idea what the numbers are like?
Oh, it's in the millions.
It's in the millions.
It's in the millions, yeah. There are feral cats that are out there not spayed and neutered that multiply like rabbits, I guess I get.
Yeah. Like Melanie was pointing out. What was that number again, Melanie, for a cat produces how many?
Well, one female cat in her litter can produce 420,000 cats in 7 years.
That's incredible. Right. That's
cats,
the kind of thing we're facing.
If they're not pregnant, can be impregnated immediately after giving birth. So one female cat can have three litters a year. And litters of seven cats, you can do the math. It's just staggering when you do.
Carolyn, do we know how many pets that local shelters rescue and place in homes each year? Do we have any idea of the numbers there? Does anybody know that?
I can tell you that our Hamilton County SPCA shelter takes in an average of 44 animals a day. And in 2013, they took in 7,178 dogs and 7,158 cats. That's a total of 14,336 animals just in one county.
Those are pretty staggering numbers when you think about it. The encouraging thing, though, is that isn't it that pet ownership's on the rise and then the number of cats and dogs being euthanized, that's going down. Is that right?
It is going down. I think across the nation there is more and more awareness of the no-kill movement. And people, as they get educated on the value of doing their homework before adopting and adopting, not shopping, I think that is having an impact. Certainly, the numbers are going down because of effective spay-neuter programs around the country. And UCAN here in Cincinnati is a stellar example of that. There is another organization that does just cats, and that is Ohio Alley Cat Rescue, OAR. And they have made a significant impact also on the trapped neuter release of cat colonies, feral cat colonies, to manage that problem. If you have a colony of feral cats and you take those cats out and euthanize them, other cats are going to come and take their place. So that's not the answer. The answer is spay and neuter those cats, put them back in that environment that can sustain them, and let nature take its course through attrition.
What is the definition of a no-kill shelter? There's a lot to that, other than just the principle of no-kill. There are a lot of facets to that, aren't there?
The League for Animal Welfare in the Eastgate area, where I'm the board president, is the region's first and largest no-kill shelter. It's been around for 66 years now. A no-kill shelter is one that has more of an ability to filter the animals that they take in, as opposed to a county shelter like the SPCA, which is an open admission shelter. An open admission shelter must take any animal that is brought to them. And that doesn't just limit them to dogs and cats. They get pot-bellied pigs, they get horses, they get all sorts of animals taken.
So you're working with all kinds of animals in these cases.
Indeed, at the open admission shelter. But at a shelter like the League, you've got the ability to screen the animals and you've got the ability to work more one-on-one with them and one-on-one with the potential adopters so that the adoption is correct in the first place, that you put the right animal in the right home with the right people, and you get fewer returns that way. So there's no euthanasia in a no-kill shelter, obviously, but unless there are cases of severe illness or medical issues where it is absolutely necessary. But in the open admission shelters, you've got overcrowding as a significant issue. And if more animals are turned in than there is space for them, euthanasia is the last resort for them. They don't like to do it, but there is really no alternative.
And there is different definitions of no-kill around the country. I think the goal is that you don't kill for space. You only kill if it's medically necessary or in the rare instance that you have a very aggressive dog who can't be rehabilitated. TZI and some other local national groups define it as you save 90% of the animals, but different people have different definitions. The basic point is you don't kill for space.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, did you want to weigh in on the no-kill definition?
Not necessarily the no-kill definition. I think Carol and Melanie covered that pretty adequately. But what I would point to is when you were talking about stats, we know that nationally there's 3 to 4 million animals that are being euthanized in our shelters every year. But the number that I like to point people to is the fact that there are 17 million people that will be looking to bring an animal in their home this year. So there's hope. There are animals dying, but we can tackle that number by adopting. If people would get their animals through a shelter or a rescue as opposed to purchasing an animal, we could tackle those numbers overnight and those euthanasia stats would go away almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember, since the 1970s, pet ownership has tripled, has it? Is that right, or doubled?
Oh, I think at least.
It's pretty substantial.
Yeah, at least, yeah. I mean, the pet industry, pet stores, is a $2 billion business now, $2 billion a year, B with billion.
Right.
So, yeah, huge.
Do you know of any communities, Melanie, that have spay and neuter regulations the same as getting shots and tags for rabies shots, and then getting your animal license as well? Are there communities that require it?
Yes, there are. That's been tested, I think, in Austin, Texas, and a couple other communities where they do require animals to be spay-neutered, and that would solve a lot of the issues if that would happen.
Now, Gary tweeted a question. Now, maybe this is something Carolyn can address. Says that has the bad economy reduced adoption rates?
I don't know that I can answer that question.
I think Carol is
at a shelter, so she could...
It certainly increased the intake on animals because people who were losing their jobs, losing their homes, had no choice but to surrender animals. And so in that period of 08 through, I'd say, 10, it was a real significant impact then. But and a slowdown in the number of adoptions. But within the last year... for instance, at the league, we had the highest number of adoptions in history last year. So I think the economy did have an impact, but there are alternatives here for people that did not exist a few years ago, too. And an organization called Pets in Need in Cincinnati is one of those that helps the low-income person, family, keep the pet by providing very low cost pet wellness care, your routine shots, your routine medications, flea tick medicine, that type of thing. And also refers to area vets that cooperate in providing very low cost care for the clients of Pets in Need, so that it is in situations where you have a chronic condition or an acute condition, there are vets that work with Pets in Need to address that. So, you know, that's an outgrowth, I think, of the economy. Carolyn, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And at the same time, when you talk about the downturn in the economy, I think that is when that's when the Cincinnati Pet Food Pantry popped up as well. And that was another resource for pet owners who were facing feeding their pet or giving their pet away. The Cincinnati Pet Food Pantry, which is run by Recycled Doggies, which is a local rescue group in the area, was formed to be able to provide short-term support for people who couldn't feed their pets. So there are many resources in the area to help folks.
And I think one of the unique things that has happened over this period of time is that you have organizations such as UCAN and OAR and PIN and the League and Furry Valentine and numerous rescue groups that are all cooperating now and sort of forming a collaborative in the community. Some of that came out of need, and some of it came out of just increased awareness that we all have to work together to address this problem. There are so many aspects to it, and we come at it from different approaches, but we're all toward the same objective.
We'll take a short break, and after that, if you've ever had an experience with adopting a rescue pet, call us and tell us about it. The number is 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon, Carol Sanger, League for Animal Welfare Board President and Board Member for Pets in Need, Melanie Corwin, Executive Director for United Coalition for Animals, and Carolyn Evans, founder of My Furry Valentine. You can join the conversation. In fact, if you had an experience with adopting a rescue pet, let us know about that. 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carol, you were talking about Pets in Need before we went into the break. That's one of the organizations you're involved with. Tell me about the League for Animal Welfare, how it got its start, what its mission is.
Well, the League for Animal Welfare started in 1949. It started as the first no-kill shelter in the region, and it was started by a very small group of volunteers, people who felt passionately about the issue. And back in 1949, I can imagine that was probably a handful of people, and they were among the only ones who had that mission at the time. It was certainly not something that in the 40s and 50s and 60s was a common issue or commonly people were aware of. But the league grew then over the years from a organization that was just strictly grassroots volunteers to a shelter facility that is in Batavia near the Claremont Airport. We also do a lot of events at external locations, Coney Island in the summer, and at pet stores during the winter, and Hyde Park Square during farmers markets, things like that. So we're getting out in the community more. But the shelter itself now employs 21 people. It's a nonprofit, of course, and it's everyone from adoption counselors to the kennel technicians that keep the place incredibly clean. And we're going right now through a renovation. So new offices are being built and lobby areas being reconfigured. And one of the things we hear most about the league when people come to visit it is that it is so unlike any other shelter they've ever been in. It is clean. It is bright. It is the animals are given dogs are in runs that have outside access. Cats are in rooms with what we call catios. So it's a, a porch area that they can go in and out of and things to climb on. And so it's, you know, very interactive with an incredible, incredible base of volunteers that work with the animals and assist the staff.
Carolyn, you've got a fascinating organization and a very interesting event that you have, My Furry Valentine. What's the story about that?
My Furry Valentine is Greater Cincinnati's largest animal adoption event. This is our fourth year. We hold it every Valentine's Day weekend. We've had 1,300 animals adopted in the first 3 years.
That many?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, about 500 per weekend. The first year we did it as just a one-day event. So we're expecting to break some records this year, at least 550 adoptions, maybe 600 if we can get people out and really convince them that this is the place to be if they're looking for an animal to bring into their home this year.
Okay. And do you deal with more than just cats and dogs? It's different types of animals, isn't it?
Different types, yeah. Primarily we'll have dogs and cats, but we also have, there's an exotic animal group, so they'll have reptiles. We've got a ferret group. I think there may be a tarantula or two. So it's, you know, there are lots of groups that have adoptable animals that they're bringing to this event. We'll have 50 different groups there and 500 animals under one roof at the Sharonville Convention Center, Valentine's Day weekend. What we also have are about 30 satellite locations around the city. So these are different places around the city where you can adopt an animal Valentine's Day weekend.
And how many guests do you think you'll have passed through over the Valentine's Day weekend?
We're expecting 6,000 guests.
6,000 and what, roughly 500 animals to adopt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And Melanie, talk about the United Coalition for Animals.
Yes. We were formed in December 2001. It started off on a voucher program to issue vouchers to people to cover the spay-neuter cost. But quickly it was realized that that was not enough. It was not making a greater impact. So in April 2007, we opened a high-volume, low-cost spay-neuter clinic. We just this year, in June, opened up in our own new building on Coleraine Avenue. We do about 60 to 65 surgeries a day. Since April of 2007, we've done a total of 68,857 surgeries. And last year we hit a record, 10,782 surgeries in 1 year. We hope to grow that. But basically, we provide spay-neuter at an extremely low cost and for free who people can't afford it through donations and grants that we receive.
How important is that to this whole issue of making spaying and neutering more accessible?
It's very important because the two reasons people don't spay-neuter their pets are cost and access, and we address both of those issues. For cost, it's free or very low cost so that they can afford it. And for access, we provide transports from 12 different locations. Adams County, Brown County, Butler County, and Claremont County in Ohio. League for the Animal Welfare is one of our adoption spots. In Kentucky, we provide transports from Boone, Gallatin, Grant, and Pendleton counties, and then in Indiana from Franklin County. People can drop off their pets. We bring them down to the clinic for spay-neuter, and we return them the next day.
Very convenient. Make it as easy as possible, don't you?
That's our hope.
It has been a huge, huge help. to people who are in the outlying areas. And I know that we at the League have heard from people who say, well, you know, I was a little hesitant to turn my dog or turn my cat over and have them, you know, gone for a day. But, oh, my God, they were treated so well, and it was just so great. And, you know, so it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And UCAN is a wonderful, wonderful place. Melanie's done a terrific job.
Thank you.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Lynette in Pleasant Ridge. Good afternoon, Lynette. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, hi. Well, first of all, I adopted my pet, my dog. He's the best dog ever. Well, yes. That's not why I'm calling, actually. My neighbors across the street have a dog. He's a small, he's young, too. He's only probably like a year and a half. A small, like, beagle. And they completely and utterly neglect him, leave him out when it's below zero. You know, he's lucky to get scraps from the table, et cetera. And I'm constantly, you know, going over there and talking to him and telling him, you can't leave this dog out here. It's against the law, et cetera. But, I mean, you know, I've told him that, and they don't care. They just leave him. And they said they'd give me the dog, which I can't bring him into my home because of my dog and cat. And I've been calling as many agencies as I could find, and I can't find an opening for him. And I wondered if you could give me any advice about who to contact or call to try to find him some help.
Okay, Lynette, thank you for the question. Good question.
Yeah, this is Carol. I think that the first step you need to take is to call the SPCA. That is their job, to go and investigate situations of animal abuse and neglect. If that dog is out in the sub-freezing temperatures, if it does not have shelter, if it does not have adequate food or fresh water, they will take that dog away from those people, and they should. You say this animal is young. I would think that rescue groups in town, such as Recycled Doggies, perhaps the League for Animal Welfare, I'm not sure what our rate of openings is right now. Usually we're at capacity, but that would certainly be an option. And people at those places can assist you in referring you to other rescue groups as well. So that would be the place to start, the SPCA and then a couple of the major organizations.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend the SPCA because they're an open admission shelter. I believe that most of the rescue groups do not take owner surrenders. They're pulling from the high-kill shelters mm-hmm. themselves. That's their priority.
Right.
Those are the animals that are the most at risk.
Let's talk with Anna in Oxford. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Wonderful.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so I don't really have any questions. I just wanted to say thank you for having animal shelters. The one that I adopt from and foster with is so wonderful, and I'm just really happy that they exist. I don't know about animal shelters in larger cities, but I know in Oxford and Cincinnati, there's so many personal animal shelters, and I really think that they add so much to society when
Which one did you adopt from?
AAF. It's an
Animal Adoption Foundation. They'll be at my Furry Valentine. They'll have lots of animals
yeah.
there for adoption this year.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
They'll be at our event, and they also have an off-site location, which means their shelter will be open for business as well. So there are two locations you can adopt an AAF animal this Valentine's Day weekend.
Anna, tell us about your cats.
Sure. The two that I adopted, one is a Siamese cat, and she's really sassy, and she's a year old. And, yeah, I walk her on a leash. She's a ton of fun. And then the other one is a kitten. Well, he's not a kitten anymore, but I got him when he was a kitten from AAF, and they got along perfectly. And the one that I'm fostering is the one that I'm especially thankful for shelters for, because I'm certain that without an animal shelter, she would not be around anymore. She's a really big mystery. She's between 10 and 17 years old. She's got kidney failure. She's missing teeth. She had a broken hip before. But because a girl found her and she worked closely with AAF to find her a foster home and care, she's still alive and well.
So you are fostering an older cat. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Anna. We appreciate the call. You know, that's something people don't often consider. They always talk about, I'm going to get a puppy or a kitten. But there are a lot of older animals that need either a foster home or an adopted home, aren't there?
There are. In fact, we have a group coming to My Furry Valentine this year that specializes in placing older animals. Angels Rest is that group. The other thing that your caller mentioned was foster care, which I'm sure Carol can talk to that probably even better than I can. That is one of the components of a community reaching a no-kill status, and that is people in the community opening their homes to be a foster family. So even if you can't be if you're not looking to adopt an animal, if you can be that animal's bridge mm-hmm. to the point where they you can keep them for a week or a month or a couple months, depending on the animal, and give them a place when there's no place in the shelter to reside until they're adopted, that can be a ticket out of the shelter for an animal. And it's very important to all of these rescues and shelters to have a strong foster network.
That's interesting, because my son actually, his dog that he adopted was originally being fostered by somebody. Mm-hmm. And it made all the difference in the world mm-hmm. for that dog, because they were the bridge. That's a good description. Nobody else wanted that dog until my son came along. Mm-hmm. It took 6 months, but now the dog has a great home.
Right, and it's a very good way, we have found, for people who aren't sure about whether they want to adopt, whether they can make that commitment, which we always emphasize is a lifetime commitment. It's a good way for them to gauge how an animal would fit into their lifestyle. And they'd be helping that animal at the same time, because in a shelter you often see dogs especially, but cats too, that become depressed or go a little kennel crazy, and they regress from what they may have known before as a pet. It's a situation that you like to avoid, obviously, and foster families that can give that animal a home environment while it's waiting to find its forever home, hugely important in this whole initiative.
How do you become a foster family for an animal? Is it the process similar to adopting?
It is working through the area shelters or through the rescue groups, letting them know that you are interested in doing that. These organizations have applications that foster families need to fill out. There are certain requirements. Obviously, you have to have a vet relationship or be willing to do whatever veterinary care is required for the animal.
But Carol, it's worth pointing out that usually that's not on their nickel. I mean,
it's not on their nickel. No,
right.
This would all be absorbed by. Good point. Yeah, it would all be absorbed by whatever shelter organization had it. But that kind of commitment to just socialize the animal, get it out, get it used to being around people, around other animals, around children.
Mm-hmm.
It is a huge leg up when you go to adopt that animal to say it has had these experiences and these are what we have noticed are the behaviors and the
in a home setting with kids and with other animals.
Exactly.
And that's one of the big distinguishing factors between a shelter and a rescue. If some of your listeners don't know the difference, a shelter is a brick and mortar facility that can house those animals, and most of the rescue groups, and we have plenty of them in Cincinnati. I think we probably have more than most cities in this country. The vast variety of different rescues that we have in the community. And rescues are really defined by groups of people who are fostering animals in their home. Mm-hmm. And they will go to different locations from weekend to weekend where they have adoption locations. My Furry Valentine just happens to be one of those throughout the year, one location where they can bring their animals.
Well, I think an important thing to know, too, is every time somebody fosters an animal, that gets that animal out of the shelter and frees a cage so that they can save another animal.
Absolutely.
So we want as many fosters as possible. That enables the shelters to save more.
And fostering leads to adoption, which
Correct.
Is
mm-hmm.
the ultimate goal. Let's talk with Jim and Ripley. Good afternoon, Jim. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yeah, I would just like to say that you're doing a great service there for the community, and I really appreciate that. But I'm wondering, is there any kind of a follow-up for adoption? After these people come in and adopt their dog, does anybody verify that they've had that they keep that dog? I have a farm in Brown County where we have dogs continually dropped off at our front gate by apparently well-meaning people who adopt them to keep them from being euthanized and then turn them loose in the country to live out their golden years. And all of a sudden we have packs of hungry dogs and who knows how many cats. So you see the dogs because they stay in packs and they're out hungry and all bony and in dire need of help. And you can't pin them down to capture them so that you can't even get help to get rid of them. And I'm wondering if there's any follow-up in place to verify that these people aren't going from shelter to shelter adopting as many dogs as they can to turn them loose in the wild.
Jim, thanks for the question.
I can only say that we at the League do follow up on all of our adoptions to make sure that it is working out. And the really vital component in all of that is to make sure going in that you are adopting the animal to responsible individuals or families, that you will not have a situation such as the one Jim has just described, which my parents used to live in the country at one point, and I know we would get dogs dropped off there all the time. And I think a lot of it is people thinking they're, you know, dogs are able to survive on their own. Cats are able to survive on their own. So let's take them out in the country and they'll find a good home. Somebody will take them in. Well, that's not true. And now, especially in this community where we have more and more problem with coyotes than ever before, that is a huge issue, that animals who are not protected are facing. We had barn cats. And five barn cats in the last year have been killed, presumably by coyotes. These are animals that wouldn't have survived in a shelter anyway, but it is, you know, some can say this is nature, but you can intervene in nature and you can make sure that nature is shows its gentler side and not this particular aspect of just dumping animals to be rid of them.
We'll continue our conversation after the break, and if you've had any experience with adopting a rescue animal, give us a call at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Carol Sanger, League for Animal Welfare Board President and Board Member for Pets in Need, Melanie Corwin, Executive Director for United Coalition for Animals, and Carolyn Evans, founder of My Furry Valentine. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carolyn, there's something you wanted to bring up for the earlier caller.
Jim, who had just called in about animals being abandoned in the country. It's a tragic situation, certainly. What struck me, though, about his comment was he was asking about animals from shelters. And I would say that that's certainly more of an owner issue than an animal issue. I don't think that that happens exclusively to animals that have come from shelters. And I wanted to point out that many of our rescue groups, I know for certain, have their adopters sign a contract that if they can no longer keep that animal, the first place they'll turn to is back to that shelter, back to that rescue group and take that animal back, because the last thing they want them to do is to be dumped at a shelter or to be just dumped out in the community to fend for themselves.
And let's talk with Sharon in Eastgate. In fact, I think she wants to add on to the idea about contracts. Sharon, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. I wonder if you could have your guests something that I've found out, which is seems to be pervasive around the country now in the contracts that people sign when they go to rescue or to adopt an animal, and that is that the person who is to adopt gets legal guardianship of the animal. They never own the animal. In my opinion, and I've consulted with my veterinarian about this, and it's all over the country, this does not seem like a good idea. It can put you, I'm no lawyer, certainly, but it seems like it could put you in some legal problems that you don't want to be in. Just having legal guardianship of a dog or a cat and never really owning that animal.
I know a little... I'm sorry.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Sharon. We appreciate the question. That's interesting. I've never run across that in any the animals I've adopted. So.
I've heard of it. And what I think the point that some of these groups are trying to make is that an animal is not an object. It's not something that you own. It's more like a family member that you have guardianship or stewardship over. So I think it's more of a semantics issue. I can't speak to the legal perspective of it, but I understand that that has been a movement that people have just been trying to convey the message that this is not something that you own and it's not something that you discard when you move or when you change your furniture and they no longer match with your decor. That's more of the issue, but I can't speak to the legal perspective
that. Probably the closest thing I ever had was one of the cats I adopted. I had to sign a form saying I would make sure the cat got vaccinated, that she was an inside cat only, that kind of thing. And that's mm-hmm. the closest I've ever come to seeing anything that resembled some kind of a contract. So mm-hmm. for what it's worth. 513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Susan in Clifton. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hello. I just want to say, hi, Carolyn Evans. This is Susan Gray.
Oh, hey, Susan. How are you?
Good. And I just want to say that people who do the work that you all do are the biggest hearted people I know. And those of us and people and beings are so happy you do the work. And I would love to hear you all talk about how you get the funding for this and how people can give money to it, because I know it takes a lot of money. And thanks for all that you do.
Yeah,
Susan, thank you for the questions very much.
Yeah.
I'm going to start.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, Susan. Susan is a good friend of mine, and she actually just came out to the microchipping event that we did at Tri-County Mall. We had free microchipping courtesy of the mall for public to bring their animals in. So, yeah, I mean, My Furry Valentine, I can speak to that, and the other ladies can speak to their organizations. We are all 501c3 nonprofit organizations. My group is run entirely by volunteers and the goodwill of people in the community supporting us financially as well as our sponsors. And I can just say for My Furry Valentine, our website is myfurryvalentine.com, and we have a donation button on our website, and we welcome all contributions to help us continue to bring this event free of charge to visitors as well as to every animal rescue group and shelter that participates.
As far as UCAN goes, we make some of our funding off of our low-cost services, but that's not near close to what it costs to run the clinic. So we rely on private donations from individuals and grants that we apply to various foundations. But contributions by individuals is certainly our most important way, and it is a tax deduction to all three of us because we are 501c3 organizations.
Yes, and the league, we're very fortunate. We have a base of sponsors or base supporters, I should say, that have been very generous over the years in making individual contributions. We have a planned giving program that people have notified us that they have left us in their wills as part of their estate planning. And then, as Melanie said, through grants and through various event type donations that we do, we get support that way, and from the adoption fees that we charge.
Let's talk with Shirley in Kennedy Heights. Good afternoon, Shirley. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. I'm calling about, and I'm assuming, the feral cats, and I had seen a special that they did a couple months ago on Channel 5, which really opened my eyes to what a feral cat was. But I experienced here in Kennedy Heights where in the last several months, I would say less than six, I've seen cats that were bigger than small dogs. I had called SPCA. I got one of those cages and the biggest one I could get to, you know, catch the cat, because they said you could bring them in and all that. And the cat, I actually caught one. It filled up the whole cage. It was so huge. I had never seen a cat this big. And then I saw another one that was so tall, I had to do a double take, and it's been about three. And these are not normal size, you know, cats. These are like over mature, huge. I mean, when I picked up the cage, I could hardly lift it. The cat had to weigh over 20 pounds. And so I was attempting to take the cat to my car, And somehow, I don't know if it's how I tilted it, it was able to break or pull up the gate and tear out of it.
You didn't have a bobcat?
I don't know what I've had, but I've seen in the last week, I've actually seen two more cats that were not typical kitty cats or even full-grown cats, because I've seen cats, you know, I'm almost 70 years old, so I know what a cat looks like. These are monsters. I mean, they are so big. I don't know if someone brought them here, because I had not seen them before any more than 6 months ago, you know, to the point that I had to do a double take. And last week I saw another one that was a different color, and they're big. They look like, they almost look like they're stuffed. And I'm saying, if I had got that cat in my car and that cat had got loose in my car, I would either had a car wreck or either would have been killed.
You would have been in trouble, Shirley.
Yeah.
So I guess what you're asking for is...
Yeah, what I'm saying is, I heard someone say that, you know, you bring them in, you get them neutered, and then you bring them back. These are monsters. I don't want them back.
Well, how do I handle this?
This is not a kitty cat. When I was a kid, I had a cat. I know what the cats look like. These are big, huge animals.
So your question, Shirley, is what do you do about this? That's what you're getting
at. What do I do about it? Because I was actually sitting on my porch, and, I mean, the cat came up and, it, you know, went up in a defensive mode, very aggressive.
Hmm. Any advice for Shirley? Melanie says she has some. Thanks, Shirley. We appreciate the call.
There is a group called Neighborhood Cat Helpers that you can contact. They have box traps that you set up high and drops on them, and that helps for the bigger cats, and they will come out if you ask them for help.
They'll get the cat out of the trap once it's in there.
Yeah, they will do the trapping, and they will help, and they will take the cat. And either release it back or they'll find a place for it.
Okay, I think the trapping and what to do afterwards has been Shirley's problem. Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Eleonora in Columbia Township. Good afternoon, Eleonora. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing very well, and thank you so much to Carol. I know her, and she's doing an amazing job. And my question is, with my dog, I've done for several years the pet therapy at the Center of Chemical Addiction Treatment. And some of the patients there were feeling very distraught because of the treatment lasts 21 days, and they were having sometimes a very hard time to find a housing for their pets while they were going through treatment. So I was wanting to ask whether there is any plan for emergency shelter, temporary shelters for people that are going through a difficult, stressful situation.
Okay. Any advice for Eleonora?
Hi, Eleonora. This is a big problem. You have people who are hospitalized for an extended period of time, but limited period of time. Other people who have had family emergencies, etc., and need to do something with their pets. There really is not a local organization that addresses this issue. It's a need, I think, that ultimately we do need to address here in Cincinnati. We ought to be able to come up with some sort of solution. But at this point, the problems that we have been trying to solve are bigger problems than that, and I think it's a matter of prioritization. You know, for all of us, we do what we can and then work our way down. Maybe there's somebody out there that wants to initiate this, and that would be absolutely wonderful. I'm sure a 501c3 status could be obtained, and people could get volunteers that would help to take these animals in on a foster basis.
Let's talk with Donna and Coleraine. Good afternoon, Donna. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy this show a lot and appreciate the topic. I just wanted to add my two cents worth. I have a rescue dachshund that I got through the All-American Dachshund Rescue. So if people are interested in, you know, purebred dogs, most of the purebreds have rescues also.
And by the way, one of my favorite dogs is the dachshund. I love dachshunds. So.
Well, I have two crazy little ones.
Thanks, Donna. We appreciate the call very much.
Well, I do Westie Rescue on the side, in those hours between midnight and 3 a.m. when you just waste time sleeping. There are other things that you can do. And so Westie Rescue Indiana, which covers this part of the Ohio region and Kentucky and Indiana, is an organization that's been around since the early 2000s, and that is a 501c3. And we do, obviously, Westie Rescue, breed rescue. There are a number of breed rescue groups around. There are also general rescue groups that specialize in older animals or animals that have particular medical needs, that type of situation. But, you know, the breed rescue groups deal with a lot of the rejects of puppy mills, and this is something that I think everybody needs to be aware of as well. A lot of the puppy millers, and it's a huge situation in the eastern part of Ohio, because Pennsylvania, about 10, 15 years ago, cracked down on their puppy mill operations that are over there largely run by the Amish. Which surprises a lot of people, but nonetheless, it's a huge industry among the Amish. And it now exists in that Holmes County area of eastern Ohio and down into the Appalachian areas. And many of these animals wind up in breed rescues or in shelters when they are no longer of any use as breeding animals to the farmers that use these animals for that purpose. These are huge operations. We're not talking about somebody who's got a dog in their backyard. We're talking about breeders that have hundreds of animals in cages that are stacked 20 feet high to the ceiling and that live in their own feces and urine and that are fed through automatic machinery and that never see the light of day or touch grass or have any human interaction whatsoever. So, you know, that's a very large issue.
Hey, we've got just a couple of minutes left here. Let's talk about what people should consider, what things they need to think about if they're considering adopting a pet. What's your advice?
My advice is do your homework. Realize what your own limitations are. Realize what your lifestyle is and can accommodate. And be prepared to make a commitment. It is like bringing another family member into the family. You become their pack. Dogs are pack animals. Cats less so, but still become very attached to their home, more so than to the individual. It's harder for a cat to leave their home. They're territorial. So be aware of that. If you're planning on moving soon, I would advise you not to get a cat until you do move and are established in your new place. If you are about to make a lifestyle change, if you're going to have a baby, if you're going to be retiring and traveling more, then those are factors you need to take into account before adopting. Because if you don't, those animals are going to wind up in rescues or going to wind up in shelters.
That's a long-term commitment, too, isn't it, Mel? I mean, dogs can live 12 to 15 years. Cats can live up to 20. So
yes.
You have to be thinking long-term when you do this, right?
Yes, you absolutely have to understand it's a lifetime commitment. And it would be very wise to plan, if something happens to you, what will happen to your pets.
Carolyn, what's your advice for somebody who's thinking about adopting a pet?
Well, first of all, I would say for anyone who's thinking of getting a pet, my first advice is that they should adopt.
Mm-hmm.
My Furry Valentine is probably the best place to do that. No other place will you have that many animals to choose from, that many different types of breeds, ages, different types of animals in one location, so you can actually meet and greet and see their personalities, talk to their foster families, talk to the people that are working with them and understand if they're going to be the right type of animal for your family. My Furry Valentine certainly is the place to be this coming weekend. It's the City of Cincinnati's official pet adoption weekend. Again, it's a free event. It's at Sharonville Convention Center, Saturday, February 14th and 15th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we welcome all people in Cincinnati to come out and see what we have to offer.
And we have links to all these organizations on our website, wvxu.org. My guests this afternoon have been Carol Sanger, League for Animal Welfare Board President and Board Member for Pets in Need, Melanie Corwin, Executive Director for United Coalition for Animals, and Carolyn Evans, Founder of My Furry Valentine. Thanks, everybody, for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.